from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on this morning's forum program, going vegan can offer a range of challenges. Can you really get enough protein without meat and dairy? And can you really make eggless desserts that are anything more than a crumbly mess? And can your genial carnivore host be convinced that it's in his best interest to, as believers and advocates of veganism might put, go vegan? Well, we'll discuss what it means to go vegan and bring you some of the favorite and presumably delicious vegan recipes from a pair of leading vegan chefs. That's next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum program. With vegan eating apparently on the rise and many advocating for more of us to go vegan for our own health as well as the planet's and to prove our love and compassion for other creatures who populate the planet, we thought we'd spend this hour talking about veganism and getting the help of some, well, allegedly delicious vegan recipes created by a pair of noted and estimable vegan chefs. And I say allegedly because I haven't tried any of them, but they certainly have a lot of testament behind them, and I might give a little testament of my own and say that there used to be a old joke by one of my colleagues at ABC that you, if you saw the people standing outside the health food restaurants, they didn't look very healthy, but the two guests here today look very healthy. Chloe Coscarelli is a chef and author of a new cookbook. It's called Chloe's Kitchen. She won Food Network's Cupcake Wars in 2010 and will be appearing this evening at Book Passage in San Francisco and tomorrow at Books, Inc. And welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello. And glad we'll say hello also to Colleen Patrick-Goudreau, author, vegan chef, founder of Compassionate Cooks. Her books include The Vegan Table and The 30-Day Vegan Challenge. And somebody called her the Martha Stewart, the vegan Martha Stewart, which I guess doesn't mean you did time in stir or anything.
No, I'll take that as a compliment.
Well, welcome to the program, Colleen.
Thank you, Michael.
And let's begin, if we could, with you, Chloe. Now, I know both of you are not trying to convert or convince. I mean, the arguments are obvious, animal lovers and the planet and allergies and all those things. But a lot of people are skeptical. That's why I said allegedly about the taste of, well, going vegan. You hear people say, it doesn't taste as good, it's bland and so forth and so on. I think you're here to convince us otherwise, both of you. But, Chloe, let's begin with you.
Well, there are a lot of more old-fashioned notions about vegan food tasting boring or bland, but that's just really not the case today. I mean, today there's such a wealth of knowledge of food and flavor, and it actually is quite simple to make a really delicious, exciting vegan meal that's packed with flavor and texture. So I would say to those of you who are still thinking in that old-fashioned mindset, pick up a vegan cookbook, mine or Colleen's, and try a recipe for yourself and see how easy it is to make something that's really delicious.
Including cupcakes. How'd you do the frosting on those?
The frosting is very easy. Instead of using butter, I use vegan margarine, which is a great healthful substitute. And it's super easy. I mean, it's pretty much the same process as making regular traditional frosting, except you just omit any animal ingredients. And I think it gives it a really light texture, which is much easier to eat and I think more delicious.
And still full of sugar and sodium and not healthy and junky?
You can do it different ways. You can do it with sugar. You can do it with agave. There's lots of different vegan recipes out there, so there is a variety to choose from.
And you hold them together with soda and vinegar, right?
I like that combo. Yeah, if you just use a tiny bit of vinegar with baking soda, it reacts and it binds the cupcake. It makes it really moist and fluffy, and you don't even need eggs. And it's so easy because everyone has a bottle of vinegar or some baking soda on hand. So it's a great substitute.
Well, for a young recent UC Berkeley graduate, you've already been covered with some glory. You won a sandwich competition in Brentwood also. What were the sandwiches you made?
I did. I won a panini contest after I graduated culinary school. My panini was a mango masala panini, and the recipe is in my new book, Chloe's Kitchen. And what the panini is it's a spiced chickpea masala with a tamarind mango chutney and a roasted cauliflower curry. And I won that contest because actually it was a charity for firemen, so the firemen were judging the contest. So I was very, very surprised and pleased when they chose the vegan panini as the winner.
They're not big donut eaters like police, I guess, are they?
I was a little nervous there. I wasn't sure if they were going to go for the prosciutto or the ham or the Swiss cheese, and they chose the vegan panini, so I was thrilled.
Chloe Coscarelli, again, her new cookbook is called Chloe's Kitchen, and Colleen Patrick Goudreau is here and been writing me for years, and finally we meet on the air here. And you talk about, well, 30-day vegan challenge, holding people's hands, getting them every step along the way to transition to veganism. Okay, why should we transition to veganism?
Well, I think you said it in the beginning. I think people already know why. I think people are already compelled because of the research we have in terms of the health benefits. I think we already know about the destruction that's being caused to the planet. I think we know that. And we know that in order to get the meat, the milk, the eggs, we have to hurt, we have to kill animals. And so I think people are really clear on why. I actually see my work as being the how vegan. Because
can I just give you a new study, in fact, that turned up actually right off the hot off the presses? Eating red meat, any amount, any type, appears to significantly increase the risk of premature death. That's according to a long-range study. Examine the eating habits and health of more than 110,000 adults for 20 years. It's just released.
Yeah, it's compelling. It's compelling and it's consistent. We see it all the time. And that's what's so exciting is, you know, when you're eating a plant-based diet, you're not taking in the dietary cholesterol. You're not taking in the saturated fat, not the animal-based saturated fat. You're not taking in the animal protein, the casein, which is contributing to cancer as well. But you're taking in all of the vitamins, the minerals, the nutrients, the phytochemicals, the antioxidants, the fiber, which people are not getting enough of. So you're getting all the good stuff and you're not getting the harmful substances. And that's pretty significant. And it's pretty exciting.
It's pretty significant. And it shows up in the blood work and all that. But you know what people also say, you don't get enough protein. You need the meat and dairy.
I've never heard that before.
I hear it all the time. Whenever the subject comes up,
I
hear it all the time. And I know you're being sarcastic, but you know, people believe that.
They do. And, you know, again, I want to demystify this for people because I want them to actually do what they need to feel healthy. That's the bottom line. I want them to feel good when they're doing this. The bottom line is we don't have diseases of deficiency in our Western culture. We have diseases of excess. We don't know anybody with kwashiorkor, which is the scientific term for protein deficiency. We don't have any kwashiorkor specialists or kwashiorkor wards in the hospital. Protein deficiency is not the problem we're dealing with in our culture. We're dealing with the diseases of excess, the diabetes, the heart disease, the cancer, the strokes. That's the problem, not the protein. And of course, there's plant protein, there's soy protein, there's wheat protein. There's plenty of protein. Protein is made up of amino acids, and amino acids are in all foods. That's the bottom line.
You're often hearing, too, and I'm sure this is, again, something you've probably never heard, the body craves meat, it craves dairy, it craves sweets, and that vegan is an unnatural diet for humans, and that it's really a non-vegan world out there.
Well, actually, I talk about that a lot. One of the things I talk about is that we don't crave meat. We don't crave the flesh of an animal. We're not an obligate carnivore. We don't see a squirrel running past us and want to jump on the squirrel and eat the squirrel, or see cattle grazing or deer grazing and even have the capacity to kill that animal with our hands. We don't crave the flesh of an animal, but we do crave fat, and we crave salt, and we crave texture. We crave a chewy mouthfeel or a creamy mouthfeel. We crave texture. We crave mouthfeel. We crave familiarity.
We probably do crave meat, too, because we're almost addicted to eating meat.
Well, I think it's the fat and the salt that we're actually addicted to, not the meat. And we can still gain all of that fat, the salt, all of those things that we say we crave that we think is in the meat through the plant foods. All of those things are in plant foods.
But Chloe, what about the argument, everything in moderation? I mean, vegans, to some people, seem like you're out there. As opposed to maybe having some fish here and some dairy,
right,
and, you know, a little bit by bit.
I think if someone's thinking about going vegan, easing into it is not a bad way to go. Trying it once a week, trying it twice a week, seeing how it works for them. But to be honest, vegan food, you really are getting everything, like Colleen was saying. The fat, the protein, the salt, there's nothing restrictive about it. So if you are thinking that vegan food is going to restrict your diet, it's just not true. You can eat Mexican food, Italian food, Moroccan food. You can pretty much eat anything you desire in a vegan version.
And according to the foreword of your book, you can lose weight, you can fight cholesterol, you can, in fact, boost your energies, which, again, there's a lot of skepticism about. You know, if I don't eat meat, I don't have that robust energy, that kind of vitality that people associate with carnivorousness.
It's not true. You can eat even more with vegan food and feel just as energized and satisfied. I found that before I was vegan, I would get that heavy feeling after eating something like ice cream or fettuccine Alfredo. I'd be like, oh, you know, I feel a little bit sick after that. But when I eat the vegan versions, I can go back for seconds and thirds and still feel great after.
And Colleen, what about eating meat raised sustainably? There's a lot of increased attempt to raise meat sustainably, and does it make a difference?
In my opinion, you know, the entire system around breeding animals only to kill them is inherently violent. And that is the same whether you're talking about a small scale or a large scale. So to me, that's just another way to try and continue, you know, to have our meat and eat it too, if you will, because I think we desperately want to do the right thing and we actually want to act compassionately. And we try to do that without making very many changes. So I don't think it really makes a difference. Doesn't certainly make a difference to the animals. And it doesn't make a difference to the person who's killing the animal. You know, it's an inherently violent act. It's very difficult to do. It doesn't feel good, and you have to really cut off a part of yourself in order to enable yourself to do it.
Well, let's find out some tasty things in terms of vegan recipes here, since both my guests are chefs who have written popular vegan cookbooks. And you're invited, by the way, to share your tastiest vegan recipe in the comments this morning by going to kqed.org/forum or our facebook.com/kqedforum page and communicate with us in either way. And comfort food is a focus of a lot of your book, isn't it, Chloe?
It is. Yes, I love comfort foods, and I just don't think that you should be deprived of those after going vegan. So I like to do a lot of the classics, like mac and cheese, sliders, french fries, cupcakes, all those foods that make you feel so good when you just want to eat something casual at home. And I show you how to do it vegan and also super easy so that you don't have to put a lot of time-intensive labor into it.
Well, I was looking at some of your recipes. One caught my eye because I do like meat, and I saw spaghetti bolognese. And usually when you think of spaghetti bolognese, you think of spaghetti with meat. But this is with mushrooms, beans, and walnuts. And I reckon it probably tastes as good, maybe better, you would say.
I really do think it tastes better. I come from an Italian family, and bolognese is no joke. It is very serious in my family. So when I got the thumbs up from my dad and my grandpa, it really meant that it tastes like the real deal.
And by the way, if you visit Bay Area Bites blog at kqed.org, you can read an interview with Chloe Coscarelli about her new cookbook. And there's a sweet potato gnocchi, speaking about Italian recipes, with sage and butter recipe there that looks pretty mouthwatering.
Yes, yeah, sweet potatoes are always a great ingredient to add into any food. So I think doing gnocchi with the addition of sweet potato really gives it that extra sweet flavor that everyone loves.
And you do a fettuccine Alfredo?
That's my favorite recipe in the book.
Is it?
It is, because I've always loved eating creamy noodles in any form. So I knew that when I wrote a cookbook, I had to include fettuccine Alfredo to satisfy that craving for others that just want that creamy pasta.
And if you go to Colleen's website, you'll see lots about smoothies, blueberry smoothies and green smoothies, but you'll see a lot about kale, too. You raise kale. I mean, you actually have it in your garden.
Yeah? I do. I love kale. Yeah.
And kale chips?
So easy. People are really intimidated by kale, and it's just so fantastic. Basically, this works with lacinato kale. It works with curly kale. You grab some kale leaves. You just rub some oil on and a little bit of salt, and you can either then make that the basis of a salad, or you can put them in the toaster oven on very low heat, and they get crispy. And so you get these crispy, salty, yummy chips instead of something like potato chips.
And Chloe mentioned mac and cheese. You have a creamy mac and cheese. I wonder how different your two. Maybe we could have had a tasting
deal here. That would have been amazing.
Could have had a tasting competition here. But then my palate is a little bit different than most, or my taste buds perhaps. But this is one of your favorites, yeah?
For sure. total comfort food again, mm-hmm. and it's cashew based. So again, with nuts, something like cashews or macadamia nuts, you can create a cream, a cheese with those nuts, and it's just fantastic. And again, it provides that fat and salt that you'd never know the difference. You'd never miss the dairy-based cheese.
And your marinated portobello mushroom steak would convince me I was eating steak.
No, I wouldn't say that. I would say that it's going to give you the satisfaction of the chewiness, of the flavor. You know, you talked before about how people say that vegan food is bland. Vegan food is fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds and grains and beans and herbs and spices. The flavor is in the plants. You know, we actually flavor our meat with plants. We flavor our hot dogs and hamburgers with ketchup and mustard and relish and onions and barbecue sauce and chutneys. We flavor our meat with the plant foods. That's where the flavor is. So when you combine the different herbs and spices, you know, the flavors, the marinades, that's where the flavor comes in.
All right. I'm coming clean now because I've already said I'm a carnivore and mea culpa, there it is. But I had a vegan hot dog once. Mm-hmm. It just didn't do it. I mean, it just didn't even come close to doing it in terms of what, now maybe that's, you know, customary bad habitual eating of hot dogs or whatever, but tell me, do I have to essentially gear my tastes and get used to them? For example, I'm diabetic. I had to start drinking Diet Coke rather than Coca-Cola. I still don't like it, but I'm used to drinking it. And sometimes I think if I were eating a vegan hot dog or a vegan hamburger, it would be like that. I might get used to it, but I never would like it as much.
Well, I think our habits are very strong. And one of the principles that I use is the whole idea of the 30-Day Vegan Challenge. And people can go to 30dayveganchallenge.com. We're launching it as an online multimedia program. So I can hold your hand and give you everything you need. But most people have the same reaction, which is, well, I don't eat a lot of meat, or I don't eat a lot of dairy, or I don't eat a lot of eggs, or whatever it is. But you really don't know how much you do until you stop. And when you stop, you actually experience your palate cleansing. You actually taste flavors that you've never tasted before. I recommend that people not try something like a meat-based hot dog, an animal-based hot dog, next to a non-meat, wheat, or soy-based hot dog, because the one that you're most familiar with is going to win. But if you have a few weeks of that familiar one out of your palate, out of your system, you actually, of course, wind up really liking, and that becomes the new one, the one that's less familiar to you, that becomes your habit. And that
you've seen this time and again with these 30-day people you've
worked with? I've seen this time and
yeah.
time and time again.
Yeah. Well, that's encouraging. Also, I'd encourage you who are listening to join us. There are a couple ways of joining us. You can share your tastiest vegan recipe in this hour by going to our comments at kqed.org/forum or our Facebook page, facebook.com/kqedforum. And by the way, if you haven't put yourself onto our Facebook page, you really ought to, because there's a lot of information and some neat photographs on there and probably be worth your while. In the meantime, you can also join us by phone. And let me give out our telephone number. It's toll-free, and feel free to be part of this program talking about veganism and vegan recipes. And our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. We welcome your phone calls wherever or however you're listening to us at 866-733-6786. 6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or as I said, go to our webpage, kqed.org/forum, click on the segment, or go to our Facebook page. Here's Beth, who writes, have Chloe's new cookbook and even the meat eaters in my life love the recipes my friends and I made over the weekend. Her book is not just for vegans. Lots of recipes that non-vegans will love and probably will remind folks that without knowing it, they may well be eating vegan sometimes and not even knowing it, like with soup, salads, and so forth. This is a nice plug for you.
Thank you, Beth.
Here's Dan, who says, my wife and I have been vegans for 11 years and are raising our three boys on the diet. They are 3, 5, and 7 and smack in the middle of the growth curves. Humans are the only species on the planet that consume the milk of another species. The question should be about how absurd the Western diet is and how sick it is making our population. Kathleen says, I discovered Colleen's podcast several years ago and have been a vegan ever since. With knowledge comes compassion and understanding and strength. I've been vegetarian since 1987. Vegan life is a clean life. I eat vegetables, beans, bread, rice, pasta, tofu, quinoa, salads, and feel so grateful that no creature died or suffered from my diet. I am healthy and happy. All this testament and should be making you guys glow. Let's go to our callers, and that's you, John, first. Hi, welcome.
Hi. So I've been almost all vegan now for about the last 7 months, and it's not a philosophical thing. It's just a healthy eating sort of thing. And I find that most difficult part is actually socially, that it's difficult for people to understand that, you know, you don't have to have meat to be pretty muscular. I'm 5'11 and 220 pounds still, and you don't have to eat meat to even bodybuild and things like that. But I think again, the hardest part is really just socially going out. When you go out to dinner, things like that, finding places to eat that will serve vegan or mostly vegetarian food, and just explaining to people that the whole lifestyle change. And by the way, the whole issue of drinking Diet Coke, Michael, you know, it has problems itself. With
yeah, I know. I've read all that stuff, too. But it's not as problematic as drinking the real stuff.
Good point.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you for the call. Well, we'll get into some tips from both of our guests who have some probably great tips about places you can go in the Bay Area. But first, Colleen, let's address essentially what he raised here about that, again, living in a non-vegan world socially.
It's true, and I talk about this a lot in my podcast. When I give lectures, it's in the 30-Day Vegan Challenge, being a joyful vegan in a non-vegan world. We live in a culture that actually makes it difficult for us to eat healthfully and for us to eat compassionately. That's not the fault of being vegan. That's what's going on in our culture. And so when we show up with our friends and family and say, I know I've always done this. I know I've always eaten animals, but now I'm not. It can rock people's worlds. It really can. And I'm very sensitive to
it. Can treat you like you're a little loopy too, maybe?
Yeah, which is so interesting because my experience is that I was raised to be compassionate and I was raised to honor animals and respect them and help them when they were hurt. And I did that when I was a child. And my parents honored that. And the adults around me supported that. And when I became vegan, which is just an extension of the same thing, I didn't want to hurt anyone, people reacted differently. Now, I know why they react that way. I know it's because I'm holding up a mirror to them, which is reflecting back to them something about their own behavior that makes them uncomfortable. So I know I don't take
it
personally.
That may be part of it. It's probably an individual thing, though.
I think that's part of it. I really do, because I'm living in a way that that reflects compassion, and I think that can be intimidating for people. But this is an extension of compassion. Veganism for me is not an end in itself. It's a means to an end, and I think that's the biggest myth around being vegan is that it's an end, and so that's where people get into this, well, you have to be perfect and you have to be pure. Being vegan for me is a means to an end, and that end is compassion.
Well, Chloe, let's get some tips from you. They're in Bay Area Bites, and again, you can visit the Bay Area Bites blog at kqed.org to read the interview Chloe does about her new cookbook. You mentioned a lot of places in the Bay Area.
The Bay Area is one of my favorite places to eat vegan. There's so much here. There's just so much everywhere. One of my favorite restaurants is Millennium Restaurant.
You worked there, didn't you?
I did work there, and I ate there every day that I worked. It was amazing. They do vegan like no one does vegan. Very gourmet, very high quality, and very inventive. One of my favorite dishes there is their oyster mushroom calamari. So instead of using squid, they use oyster mushrooms, which still have that delicious chewy texture and salty flavor.
You mean sometimes rubbery texture, calamari.
Almost, yeah. Yes. But this dish is so delicious. If you love calamari, you will love the oyster mushroom calamari at Millennium Restaurant.
By the way, it's pronounced quinoa, isn't it?
Quinoa.
Yeah.
Yes.
I botched that nicely. Sorry about that.
Don't even worry.
Sometimes you read words and it doesn't even go through into your head. Ken is our next caller, by the way. Hi, Ken.
Hi. Two questions. One thing has to do with labor intensive. And, you know, when I think of a lot of vegetables and stuff like that, and I see some of these dishes, I just, you know, wonder, you know, how labor intensive. We have such a fast food culture that, you know, that would be one of my concerns. And the other question is, I'm a Mexican food freak, and I love flautas, for example, with chicken flautas, which I can buy, you know, already prepared and everything.
Let's get you a quick answer because we're coming up on a break here. And I don't know, Colleen or Chloe, whoever wants to respond here.
Well, there's a restaurant in Berkeley called Flautas, and he can certainly get that filled.
There you go. Good tip. And we are coming up on a break. When we come back, we'll take more of your calls, hear more from you. Again, you can go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and give us your favorite recipe or participate in the program with any questions or comments you might have. You can also do that by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our Facebook page. We're with Chloe Coscarelli and Colleen Patrick-Goudreau, both authors of Vegan Cookbooks. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're spending the hour talking about going vegan, which can offer a range of challenges. Can you really get enough protein without meat and dairy? Can you really make eggless desserts that are anything more than a crumbly mess? Well, both of our guests say absolutely on both, and both are vegan chefs and vegan cookbook authors, and we're getting advice on how to prepare vegan meals that are, well, healthy, hearty, and don't skip on flavor. Chloe Coscarelli is a chef and cookbook author of Chloe's Kitchen. She won the Food Network's Cupcake Wars in 2010. And again, she'll be this evening at Book Passage in San Francisco at 6 p.m. and tomorrow at Books, Inc. at 7 p.m. Colleen Patrick-Goudreau, known as the Martha Stewart of the vegan world, is with us as well, author and vegan chef. Her book is called The Vegan Table. She's also the author of the 30-Day Vegan Challenge and founder of Compassionate Cooks. And both my guests are saying off air to me that Bay Area, well, they're arguing about whether the Bay Area or Los Angeles is better for vegans, but in terms of restaurants and places, I guess, to get vegan food in general, but New York out-trumps both, huh? Sadly, though, you may want to admit that as
we
natives.
Both love a Korean restaurant in New York called Hungawi, and it's a beautiful, serene space. You take your shoes off when you dine there, and they just have the most delectable Korean dishes. I think that was the one place we agreed on.
Well, let's bring some more callers in here, and a caller from Princeton, New Jersey named Jemima, which makes me think of those old pancake boxes. Good morning.
Hi, hello.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a comment because my son, he's autistic, and he's 3 years old now. And he was having a lot of digestion issues, and who have autistic children knows they have a lot of problem with digestion, constipation, diarrhea, all this kind of things. And I decided to remove the meat from his diet and also the gluten. But when I decided to change for, you know, dairy-free, everything-free, my son became so much better, and that inspired me to think about maybe I should change as well. And at first I just changed for vegetarian, but I have to say that thanks to Colleen, after listening her podcast and, you know, hearing about what really veganism is, I decided to give it a try, and I bought some books and her book. And now more than 7 months, we are vegan at home, and my son just have his birthday party of 3 years old with vegan cupcakes, and everybody can believe in the food was vegan. And I think we cannot never compare. I used to say I can never give up cheese. But what I learned from Colleen is that it's not just about what is, you know, taste good, but you have to make good as well.
Well, it's helped with your son's digestion, and I'm glad you gave that testimony. The fact is, you've probably heard a lot of this, Colleen, haven't you, through the years?
I do, and I'm so grateful. Thank you so much, Jemima. It's just so encouraging. And I think that's what's so exciting is that when people really experience the benefits themselves, whether they're the health benefits or the spiritual benefits, living consistently according to their values, they experience the joy of being vegan. And I just get to be the recipient of testimonies like that. But that's what's exciting. People can experience it for themselves.
Well, I did think of Aunt Jemima. And do either of you have good pancake recipes? Good vegan pancake recipe?
Yes.
For sure, yeah.
And both of you?
I think we both do.
I think so, yeah. My first cookbook was The Joy of Vegan Baking, and that was in 2007. And I'm so thrilled that the book has really become a repertoire in a lot of people's kitchens. And my pancake recipe, I know, is a very well-loved, well-regarded recipe. Really easy. You talked before about the baking soda and the vinegar. There's no vinegar in these pancakes, but the leavening that we use in baked goods. It's baking soda. It's baking powder. Eggs aren't used for leavening. Eggs are used for fat. Eggs are used for binding, and you can still get the binding and the fat through oils, plant-based oils. So in the pancakes, it's a plant-based oil. You can use a non-dairy butter, and there's baking powder, and that makes them rise and fluffy.
I was interested in the banana chocolate chip muffins. I may have to try those.
Those are famous. They're amazing. I just made them. We're selling our house, and I've been making cookies and muffins and coffee cake for all of the brokers and the potential buyers who are coming to our house.
You're going to be buying another house, huh? The house that veganism helped build, right?
That's right.
Let me go to more callers here, and we get a caller from Marin County. Angie, good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
You were asking about favorite vegan recipes, and I actually have a recipe that I make for potlucks that I saw Colleen make on a TV show called Tuna Salad, and it's really easy to make. It's garbanzo beans, walnuts as the base, and then you do whatever you want to that you would do to tuna salad. I add veganaise, garlic aioli, Dijon, celery, sometimes red onion. I take it to potlucks, and people always are shocked that it's not really tuna. And then they say, well, why is it better than tuna? And I say, because it's cruelty-free. And people always want the recipe, always. And it's super simple to make.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. Let me go to some of your emails. Excuse me. Here's Matt, who says, so if we give up meat, milk, and eggs, don't we throw entire culinary traditions out the window? We're scrambling to preserve languages that are dying out. Is cooking not worth saving? What about the poor French who spent decades building a cuisine they can be proud of? Would you rob the French of their pride? That's just cruel. I'm willing to chop a few years off my lifespan to eat the foods I like.
Well, I think we are preserving those traditions. We're just making vegan versions of them. So in my new cookbook, I do a French apple tartare with coconut whipped cream. So it's still the same flavors, the same cooking techniques. We're just replacing the animal ingredients with the vegan ingredients.
Here's a listener who says, this is Alan, this show reminds me of a joke. How do you find a vegan at a party? Don't worry, they'll find you. That said, Muffin Mania in San Rafael has incredible vegan muffins that taste every bit as good as non-vegan. Another listener writes, a couple questions. This is Rachel. Is the concept of a complete protein still important for vegans? I've heard there is research contradicting its importance. Also, can your guests recommend milk alternatives that they like? I can't have soy or almond and all the other milks, quote unquote, have so many additives, including carrageenan. Finally, how does a baking soda and vinegar egg substitute work? Well, I guess we've kind of intimated that.
It just creates a reaction, as Chloe said, that creates a leavening effect. That's what the baking soda and vinegar does. As far as the protein, I'll take that one. You know, that's been a myth that has been debunked for decades, and yet it's still perpetuating this myth. The myth started when Frances Moore LePay wrote her first book, Diet for a Small Planet, because she discovered that actually by feeding the world a plant-based diet, we can feed an entire world population.
And she's still on her crusade.
And she still is, and there's still work to do. And in giving people that information, she wanted people to be as healthy as possible. So she, based on faulty research, said that in order to get a complete protein, you need to eat the foods that complement each other to get all of the amino acids. And in the second edition of her book, she said, I was wrong. But apparently no one read the second edition of her book because that myth is still being perpetuated. She said, if you want to complement your proteins, just say something nice about them. Amino acids are in all foods, and our bodies are smart enough to assimilate all of the amino acids we need in a given day. So as long as we're eating a variety of food and we're not eating potato chips all day, we have no problem getting the protein we need, period.
Want to add anything, Chloe, here?
As for the non-dairy milk substitutes, I would recommend coconut milk. If you're allergic to soy and almond, coconut milk is a great substitute, especially for baking. It has a very creamy texture. And something a little bit lighter would be rice milk, and that you can find in any grocery store, and another great alternative to dairy milk.
And just to touch on the coconut, too, so a lot of people are familiar with the coconut milk we get in a can to make something like Thai curries, but there's also a commercial coconut milk that's made by So Delicious Turtle Mountain Foods, and you can get that in the dairy section.
Jason, do we have you on the line here?
Yes, sir. Yes. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, go ahead.
So it's a fascinating topic, and I can't deny the nutritional benefits of going vegan. I grew up with a food chemist for a father, and I have a nutrition background. And I tried going vegetarian a few years back, and I just felt almost malnourished. I don't know what it is, but my questions are twofold. One, can your guest speak to blood type and how blood type relates to this diet? And also, you know, taking into account evolutionary science and how we've been eating as omnivores for millions and millions of years, what about iron and vitamin D and these other specific amino acids that are involved in the eating of flesh?
Well, neither of you is a trained scientist, but can you talk about blood type and diet or any thoughts?
Well, I actually don't think that blood type has anything to do with it.
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, I actually don't believe that.
But what about iron, vitamins, and D, then, as long as he's raising that? Where do you get?
Sure. And, you know, the bottom line
is, get enough?
The nutrients we need are plant-based. The nutrients we need are plant-based. The only nutrient that's not plant-based is bacteria-based, and that's B12. We're right now, the problem is that we're going through the animals to get to the nutrients we need. So iron is a plant-based mineral. You know, Popeye ate spinach, and Popeye was strong, and Wimpy ate burgers, and Wimpy was Wimpy. Plant-based iron makes you strong. So we don't need to go through the animal to get to the nutrients that are already in the ground that the animals are eating themselves. In terms of feeling malnourished, I've heard this from people too. I think one of the things that happens when people make the transition to vegetarian or vegan is they're eating fewer calories because very naturally plants have fewer calories than the fat-based animal products. So what happens is they're eating fewer calories and that could lead to feeling lethargic, that could lead to feeling tired. All you need to do is eat more so that you're eating more, which equates to energy. So it's not necessarily that being vegan makes you tired or lethargic or malnourished. It's that you may need to eat more, especially if you're, you know, if you're not eating enough in terms of your weight.
Well, I know that there's been research that shows that vegans are supposed to be more energetic. And in fact, it's right in the foreword of your book, Chloe.
Yes.
There's this notion, it may be somewhat of a urban legend, though, that if you eat meat, I mean, warriors used to eat meat. You know, they used to eat sometimes even the flesh of the people that they slayed and defeated and vanquished. But there's this idea that if you eat meat, you somehow, you're more virile if you're a male. Or if you're a woman, you know, you eat meat and it gives you more, I guess, endocrine force or something. It's like, and like we're talking, I guess, about almost some notion of hormonal push through meat.
Well, the meat that our society eats today is definitely filled with additives and hormones, so that is definitely part of it.
Much worse things even than that in many instances.
It's true. It's true. So like Colleen said, eating a plant-based diet, you really are, your body is able to absorb the nutrients better. And dark green leafy vegetables in particular, they have just about everything you can need. So if you include them in your diet, like kale and collard greens, you're getting so much more energy than you could from a piece of meat.
Go to some of your emails. Patricia writes, I've been a vegan for nearly 3 years. I'm 51. I feel so much better. Strangers stop me on the street to ask me what I do to my skin. Americans are addicted to looking fabulous, darling. That's the easiest path to getting others to try it. Antoine says, I think that I would agree with your guest, the love for salt and fat, except for the fact that meat tastes different with different seasoning. Steaks are delicious and tofu is not. I have cut out heavy portions of meat, but I love steak, chicken, some pork cuts, and fish. I like the Morningstar brand of substitutes, but they do not compare to meat. And this is something, again, that you hear all too often. Here's Tim who writes, I don't like the taste of many vegan foods, but generally I cannot eat it because of my specific nutritional needs. I'm not saying there aren't people who can, but not me. The vitamins, enzymes, minerals, etc., unique to animal foods are essential to my health. I get sick on an all-vegetarian diet. Plant oils take a lot of chemical and physical processes to extract and are much more prone to the oxidation and thus heart disease than animal fats, and there is good evidence for this. The guests make a number of nutritional assumptions that are currently not a done deal, as they say. In fact, they're being looked at again. Ask Michael Pollan. Actually, I know Michael is working on some of this. He's doing a book on bread, though. But there are people who probably aren't just not cut out to be vegans, right?
We are humans. We have the same physiology, and we are built as people who are technically capable of consuming animals, but we're not doing a very good job. We are not obligate carnivores, and when you look at our physiology, we actually we resemble herbivores way more.
So Tim's copping out.
I can't speak to Tim's specific problems, but we are physiologically built resembling herbivores much more than we resemble carnivores.
Well, here's Eleanor who wants in on this. Eleanor, hi.
Hello. I just wanted to comment on something. Like you just sort of said it again, and that is I wanted to talk about the fact that you guys had said that humans are not like do not see an animal and want to chase it down or something. But the thing is, ultimately, we did not evolve as predators. We evolved as scavengers. So we see a piece of dead meat, and we do actually want to eat it. We don't, it's not as though we want to chase an animal down.
You mean you like roadkill, Linda?
Eleanor,
excuse me. No, you say you see a dead animal and somehow it becomes a salivating process or something like that. Well, what about the idea though? I mean, both of you have probably heard this argument that, you know, it's not inconsistent, it's more consistent with evolution to eat. the way we eat, which is all wrong by most accounts, right?
For sure. You know, I think we can use our ancestors and evolution as scapegoats for continuing to do something today that we want to just continue doing. And I just think we do a lot of things that are not necessarily, you know, evolutionarily correct or quote unquote natural. And I think it winds up becoming an excuse. I think the whole point of being human is that we do things better than we used to do them. And I don't really need to use Neanderthals as the model for my ethics or the model for my behavior. The truth is we have so much evidence and we have so much food available to us to eat a healthful plant-based diet. We don't need to hurt animals and we don't need to consume animals in order to get the nutrients we need or the flavor that we want. As far as the...
You're giving Neanderthals a bad name.
You know, they need to be re-examined.
Could you respond, though, to a question we've gotten a few times from a few listeners already? Why make vegan food taste like meat? Why the necessity? Why not eat it naturally? Or,
well, I mean, meat is a word that used to refer to that which was eaten, to distinguish it from that which was drunk. So we say coconut meat still, and we say nut meat. So for me, meat has to do with the substance of a thing, and that could be a nut-based meat, it could be a wheat-based meat, it could be a soy-based meat, it could be an animal-based meat. The whole idea is that it's something that gives us the flavor and the texture that we desire, and with the flavors and the herbs and spices, it's not trying to be animal-based meat, it's trying to be something flavorful and chewy.
And I think for people to feel like they are not putting a restriction on their diet, they still want to taste the same familiar flavors. So recreating dishes that remind them of meat that they used to eat is a wonderful segue to a vegan diet to show them that they can still have these old flavors, but just be eating them from new means.
More of your emails. Here's Chris who says, having known and lived with lots of vegans over the years, I've always wondered, the recipe seems so derivative and choose to focus on imitations of animal-based dishes. Well, he's reiterating what we just talked about. But he says, an extreme example of this, I was at a vegan restaurant a week ago, and they had vegan Philly cheesesteak sandwiches. I had to order it because it was so absurd, and not surprisingly, it was one of the most disgusting things I've ever eaten. Let me go to more of your calls, and we'll go to San Rafael and welcome Julie. Hi, you're on.
Hi, this is Dr. Julie Griffith. Hi, Michael. I love your show. You're verbally brilliant. We're very lucky to have you. I think that vegetables are fantastic. You know, eating five different colored vegetables a day is wonderful because our body needs the different chemicals from each colored vegetable. But I see a number of patients who are either vegan or vegetarian, and they have a number of nutritional deficiencies. They can have them. Amino acid deficiencies where they can't make proteins, which are needed for so many things in the body, like to make enzymes and skeletal muscle, heart muscle, neurotransmitters, hormones. They can have cholesterol deficiency because cholesterol comes from egg and animal products, and they may have a weakness in being able to synthesize cholesterol from a vegan diet. Or they may have a toxin or something that's hurting their ability to make cholesterol. You have to have a blood level of 160 to make all of the steroid hormones, like progesterone, estradiol, and also the stress hormones, cortisol, DHA sulfate. And if you have adrenal insufficiency, not enough cortisol, then you become hypothyroidism. You have hypothyroidism, and you can develop fatigue and inattention, and people become more withdrawn. You know, they're not... they're not as loquacious. And then patients can have B12 deficiency.
Well, you've given us quite a catalog here. I don't know. Neither of my guests are medical people or move in those realms. But, I think Julie's call is pertinent because I do keep hearing from some people, I was a vegan, I loved it, I would like to have stayed a vegan, but it affected my health. I've heard this.
I think it's very common that when people do decide to switch to an all-vegan diet, they maybe don't know how. They don't know how to incorporate all the nutrients into their diets. And that's why me and Colleen are here to show people that with a few simple substitutes, you can get everything you need. But as for the doctor's patients, it is possible that maybe they jumped into it without preparing their pantry properly and learning exactly how to substitute those nutrients. And for those of you who are thinking of trying a vegan diet, I would definitely suggest checking out my or Colleen's book because we will break it down for you and make this an easy process.
Well, let me ask Julie, you think there maybe is a need for better education here like Colleen's suggesting?
Yeah, I think if patients...
Chloe's suggesting, excuse me. Yeah.
With who are vegan or vegetarian, if they have symptoms of fatigue, anemia, a toxicity, which could be like peripheral neuropathies, if they have chronic infections, then they need to test their blood levels of these nutrients, fasting, amino acid, cholesterol, and the best way to check a B12 deficiency is a simple urine or blood test, methylmalonic acid, because it's simple to have the deficiencies, and then they need to supplement so those go into the normal range. And then their bodies can function better. My concern is not just a regular person, but a person who's exposed to something like a toxin where they don't have the machinery in their body. They need extra nutrients, and the vegan diet may not provide enough.
Yeah, this is good medical advice, and we thank you for the call. Appreciate it. I want to go to some more emails before I go to more calls. Madeline from Oakland says, well, I do not disagree that veganism is probably healthier. There's an attitude that vegans have toward the rest of us, the emphasis on compassion that smacks of superiority. Not everybody gives this impression, but many do. They are the same people who stick up their noses at cars in place of bicycles. You guys got tooed, as we used to call it?
I don't know those vegans. And I hear that. It's such a misconception. It's so interesting because vegans are often on this receiving end of defensiveness and hostility and people asking you why you're vegan, and they get really defensive. And I'm just trying not to hurt anybody. That's really all it is.
Okay,
and sometimes
I've got a question.
All I say is I'm vegan, and someone could get defensive over that.
Got a question for you right online here. I mean, right in terms of what you're saying. Helen says, what's unethical about milking a cow?
You know, before I went vegan, I had no idea what I was contributing to. We all think that cows very naturally come into this world giving milk. We use that language. They give milk. Well, a cow has to be pregnant, just like any female has to be pregnant in order to lactate. And that milk is there for their offspring. So you have to impregnate a cow. She's pregnant for 9 months, just as long as a human is. And at the end of that 9-month period, all she wants is her baby. And she's not allowed to have her baby because in order to take her milk, we have to take her baby away. And if that offspring is a male, he's killed instantly because he has no use in an industry that exploits the female reproductive system. And if she's female, she goes into the same servitude as her mother. And at the end of her quote-unquote production cycle, which is about 4 or 5 years in the dairy industry, whether it's a small dairy operation or a large one, she's sent to slaughter, and cattle can live up to 20 to 25 years. So from the cradle to grave, from the beginning to the end, there's nothing compassionate about using a female just for her to milk to produce milk. For what? We don't even consume our own human milk once we're weaned. Cattle don't consume their own species milk once they're weaned. They stop and they move on to the solid food. So the whole idea that we're even doing this to cattle, to cows, to goats, makes absolutely no sense.
Here's Annie, who writes, I made vegan chili for my family last night, spicy and delicious. I could have used less spice, and I will, but it is very tasty and hearty. My husband, a reluctant recruit, has a major issue against total veganism, the absence of dairy, namely the cheese and butter. I have to agree that vegan cheese isn't that delicious. Or maybe I'm trying the wrong recipes?
I would say you're doing the right thing by just cooking for him. It's not about converting him 100%, but by incorporating some meatless meals into your family's diet. As for the recipes, I know all the recipes in my book have passed the taste test from very carnivorous, non-vegan taste testers. So I would
haven't
suggest
tried my
checking
palate
them out.
Yet.
We will.
Here's another listener. Melissa says, what about vegan eating for people who have wheat allergies? It seems like so much vegan cooking makes up the bulk of meat with wheat.
I don't think so. My one of the things that Julie had said was talking about eating by color. My third cookbook was called Color Me Vegan, and it encourages people to eat by color as much as possible. And all the color is in the plant food. So when you're eating a Whole Foods plant-based diet and you're not, consuming tons of baked goods, et cetera, you're getting a lot of very naturally wheat-free whole fruits, vegetables, grains. There's plenty of grains that are wheat-free,
definitely,
et cetera. So it's not a problem.
Here's Lorna. Join us, Lorna. You're on the air.
I sure am, and thank you so much for your program. I'm going to make this brief and try to address a couple of issues. I appreciated Julie, the doctor, calling in. I've worked for 36 years in this industry with doctors, with cancer and heart patients. I am a vegetarian for 36 years. One of the points, though, that Julie made about the medical aspects, I think we need to be aware that sometimes people are looking at a disease when it could be a detox issue. Those people generally will have come from a meat-eating past, and some of this could be detox rather than a disease factor. And I've seen this in blood reports that over a period of time with intelligent eating and vegetarian, vegan eating, that these will ameliorate. They will even themselves out. The other factor is, for those concerned with the compassion issue, which your guest have brought up, is I was reading an old book on vegetarianism, and it said that the original word for war meant the desire for more cows, which is kind of an interesting issue. We also don't eat carnivores. We eat vegetarian animals. And Dr. Sharma from Ohio State made a very important point at a conference, saying that the digestive tract of a true carnivore is 2.5 times shorter than that of a human. So we are not naturally even omnivores. We eat it because it was available. But the fact is, the shortest lives are carnivores. And somebody told me once, well, you kill a carrot when you eat it. I said, quite the opposite. I can plant the exact DNA of that carrot. I can plant an apple seed and come up with an entire tree of apples. And I said, also, if I sit under it long enough, it'll fall in my lap. The last time I checked, no heifer ever came over and sat in your lap and said, eat me.
Well, but you remember all that. In fact, I write about this in one of my books, all that stuff about plants talking, getting messages and responding to music and everything. I said, if you really want to be moral, you probably can't eat anything. This has been a very illuminating hour, and I want to thank both of you and remind you that Chloe Coscarelli will be at Book Passage at 6 p.m. tonight. You can meet her, and tomorrow she'll be at Books, Inc. at 7 p.m. Thank you both. Her new book is called Chloe's Kitchen. Colleen Patrick Goudreau is the author of a number of books, The Vegan Table and The 30-Day Vegan, and founder of Compassionate Cooks. And you can visit Bay Area Bites blog at kqed.org to read an interview with Chloe Coscarelli on her new cookbook. And also, as I said, you're invited to share your tastiest vegan recipe in the comments at kqed.org/forum or our facebook.com/kqedforum Facebook page. Thank you both for being here. And I want to say that today we bid farewell to our longtime forum producer, Kevin Guillory, who is moving on after 25 years as a reporter and producer with KQED to pursue other interests. We want to thank Kevin for the years of service to public broadcasting, and our best wishes go to him and to his family. I want to also thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Judy Campbell and Tina Lauerberg. Thanks to our engineer, Danny Bringer. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. And thanks to all of you. We would not be here without you. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.